This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Glad you've been with us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM, as we continue along on a Tuesday. Now that 15 weeks in the NFL are done, as the Saints last night, a masterful performance against the Colts. Drew Brees, with his four touchdowns, now owns the all-time career passing touchdown mark, Peyton Manning. It got me thinking, and we talked about this earlier today. We're kind of looking back as we close out the year. We're also closing out a decade, 10 years of our sports, and some of the stories that really dominated the decade, and some of the stories that are unforgettable for the decade. And you think about a team like the New Orleans Saints, who began this, in 2010, began this 10-year run by winning the Super Bowl. And I started going, look, there's a lot of emotion that comes from winning a Super Bowl for a city, and does the Saints Super Bowl, is that one of the most important Super Bowl victories for a city in the last 10 years, if not for a while? But when you look back, here are the teams that have won Super Bowls in that decade since the Saints. The Packers, well, that's a traditionally championship title town type of city. That's a very important. The Giants beating the Patriots the second time around, second title for Eli Manning, but still important for the city, but they had one a few years ago. Ravens, they had one a few years before that, winning Super Bowl 35 against the Giants. The Seahawks, all right, first ever Super Bowl championship for them, had gone to the Super Bowl before, lost to the Steelers, but dominated and showed off their incredible defense. Patriots, Broncos, the final Super Bowl for Peyton Manning. He retired after that year. The Patriots again, Philadelphia, first time for that city winning a Super Bowl, the emotions of a generation. Thinking about generationally for Philadelphia fans going all the way back in the sports history of the Eagles, Chuck Pignarik, all of that, Ron Jaworski playing in Super Bowl 15 against the Oakland Raiders and Jim Plunkett, the Donovan McNabb-led Eagles team that lost to the Patriots in Super Bowl 39. But the Saints in the decade, that team winning that Super Bowl for that city that was on the verge of just losing its team and losing its city, and how it had to recover from Hurricane Katrina, still to me, 10 years later, still I think the most important Super Bowl victory by any team for the larger aspect of what it meant, not just to the fan base, but for the rebirth of a city that, for those who have visited, have always loved and cherished, and that win really brought it out.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. So there's this story coming out of Salt Lake City. I found so intriguing. So do you remember last year when Russell Westbrook got in an altercation with a fan? Who basically, Russell Westbrook said, he was on the road with the Oklahoma City Thunder at the time. This was last March. He said that the fan used some sort of racial verbiage, yes, in attacking him. And Westbrook had none of that. He turned to him and said, I'll blank you up. I'll blank up. If that's your wife, I'll blank her up too. I mean, he was very emotional about it. He believes that this fan said, get on your knees like you're used to. The fan claimed what he said was to ice up those knees or tape up the knees better. Which, I mean, I don't know, depending on who you believe, I don't know. But Westbrook claims he heard what he heard and got into an altercation with fans. Now, as we know, when you have a situation like the Malice at the Palace, it's really tough for the league. They don't want you going after fans, even verbally. But nevertheless, Westbrook did so. And when he did, he actually got support from a lot of players around the league who claim they've heard similar things in various cities and didn't do anything. And here was Russell Westbrook saying, enough is enough. I heard you say that. I believe you said that. And I'm going to let you know how angry I am that you said that. So this gentleman is filing a lawsuit against Russell Westbrook for $100 million in damages, both he and the girl who were at the game. And he claims he never said this, but he's also claiming that because he was banned permanently by, you know, can never buy a ticket again in Utah, in Salt Lake City. He also says he experiences public distress because people point him out in public and they take pictures of him and they ridicule him in public, can I be honest with you? How much do you think that that's really true? Do you think there's a lot of people who really recognize his face months later and are like pointing him out in public?
Not a chance.
I don't think there's a chance of that.
If you gave me, said, here, you know, here's a lineup, pick him out, I wouldn't know what he looks like
I don't know either. I have no idea what he looks like. And I really have a hard time believing that in the hustle and bustle of today's society, people remember what somebody looks like after this story came and went.
Now, if he was wearing a white hood, maybe I would recognize him.
Oh, sure, right? I mean,
I'd be able to point him out in a lineup.
If he was on TV every night on the local news, talking and yelling and screaming and all that other stuff, maybe. But I just have a hard time. When people tell me that, I always go, really? Do you think this story has that kind of staying power that months and months and months later, people are still recognizing you on the street for this one incident that you had where your face wasn't even shown to a lot of us in America, maybe locally, but not nationally.
Let's be real. There's a reason why they call it 15 minutes.
That's right. Right.
Because it doesn't last. I mean, I might have been able to recognize him after the event. After the event took place, I don't even know if I would have recognized him then.
Right. And even if I did see him in like reading the story and at the time seeing a picture, I would not remember what he looked
right.
like.
A month you know, later?
A month later?
But it's just a week later.
I agree with you completely. I just don't think you're subject to this kind of level of abuse over and over and over and over again. You know, it's really hard for me to buy that you've experienced that much damage to your name.
All right, so now that we squashed that, what else is he suing for to earn his $100 million?
Yeah, that's $100 million is a lot of money. Emotional distress, claims of defamation. You know, obviously because Westbrook pointed him out. Yep. You know, saying what he said was racist.
Did he get fired from his job?
I don't know. That's funny. I don't know.
Is he hiring a too high priced of a lawyer?
Maybe true. Maybe the lawyer said, I'll get you.
Maybe discounted a little bit.
Yeah. Well, the lawyer says to him, hey, man, I've done these cases all the time. You deserve $100 million for that. He's got the money. Westbrook was fined $25,000 for his verbal action, and that's one he'll easily pay because he wanted to say what he had to say. He knows the rule. There's no gray area here. You're not allowed to yell at fans. But if you want to, you know what it's going to cost you. You're going to have to pay a fine. So, but because here's the other thing. I guess his lawyer must be hoping there's a settlement here, right? Because there's no way this is going to court. If I'm a judge, I throw this out, right?
Yes.
There's no way. Like, I don't want to sound like I don't know the guy's brain. And I don't know what he said. Okay. But does it? I'm going to be careful here because I don't know what he said, but do you find it weird that he would say to Russell Westbrook, tape those knees better so you can play better the next time you play the Jets? Does that sound like something you would say? You better ice those knees so they're 100% next time you play the Jazz because we're taking advantage of you now with your injury. Does that sound like something?
You know what, Tony? I can't tell you how many basketball games I have gone to, and those words have literally came out of my mouth.
Right? Where you yell at opponent, hope you're better next time, because right now that injury is preventing you from being your best, and we're taking advantage of it.
Aw, gee willikers.
Right? This is a big accusation to make, and I don't want to make it.
No, I mean,
but I'm just not. I'm just not putting my head around
it. Is
that angle to the story? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, Russell Westbrook said, you know, he heard his thing, like, get on your knees. Well, it was
get on your knees like you're used to.
Like you're used to. Right. Okay. That would make me mad. Because you can take that two ways. You can take that as a racial thing, or you can take that as a different way.
Right.
If you will.
Right. Absolutely.
Either one is not a good one.
Yep. And remember, certain. When he said, here's the other key to the point. After he went after the fan, there were a lot of NBA guys that said, that's a long time coming. That this goes on in every arena, and I'm glad Russell is saying what he said.
Listen, it goes on around the world.
Right. Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
There's issues going on in Europe right now with, especially with Eastern European teams. When you have a team like, an English Premier League team or a Serie A team, a La Liga team, when they go and play in a country, because you have this international, or I call it an international tour, but it's strictly for Europe, though, where these club teams are playing other teams. The other times they get a team from like Poland or a team from the Czech Republic are forced to play in an empty stadium because their fans were saying things.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
I mean, either, you know, making monkey calls or throwing bananas onto the field. You know, at a certain African, or I can't say African American, but at black players.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a huge problem over in Europe. We're naive to think that it doesn't go on here.
Oh, of course. Of course. And
I just think it's funny that you picked Utah.
Yeah, right.
To make your story.
But here's the other thing, though. If this were to go to court, and let's say just for whatever reason, and I'm not a legal expert, so I don't know how he would win, but let's say he wins. This is a little bit of a blow to where NBA players should be allowed to say, look, commissioner, I know I'm not allowed to yell at fans, but in some circumstances, I'm going to, and I'll pay the fine. I won't go after them,
yep.
But I'm going to.
I won't enter the stands.
But if it's, I'm not going to enter the stands, but 25 grand, I'm willing to pay that to say to some racist in the stands that I'm not standing for what he's saying.
Right.
So, but if it's going to cost me $100 million because I do that, because I have a higher stature in society, meaning my words are going to travel more than his words, and I'm going to make news by this action more than he's going to make news, and I'll put him, if that's going to cost me $100 million, that ability is going to get taken away from me. And so in a way, and again, this is not the league's thing, this will be the judicial, you know, system in Utah, but I just think this gets dismissed. But if he were to win, it really would change the way players are allowed, not allowed, but would want to sort of say, yeah, I'm not listening to this anymore.
And
get
I'm
him out of
you.
Here. Take
I'm,
him out.
I'm with you on this, man. The judge has to take one look at this and go, are you kidding
$100
me?
Million dollars?
We're not going to try to prove you heard this, you thought you said this type of thing. You're never going to get to the bottom unless there was solid video recording that
right.
was done on the court. Obviously, there wasn't.
Because
that would have came out. TMZ would have had it in 2 minutes after the effect. So obviously that's not there. So you can't really have a he said, she said. And it's not, I mean, if it's $100 million, just throw it out.
Yeah.
There's no reason. Just can't do it.
Yeah, exactly. Unbelievable. $100 million.
A lot of money.
Like if he had said, I really didn't say that and I'm suing for $1 million, I'd be like, oh, all right, well, let's see where it goes. All right, let's see if there's evidence pops up. $100 million almost makes the suit laughable. But
oh,
again,
totally
I'm not a
does.
Lawyer, so I don't understand how this works. Maybe there's a real reason
but
for
I
it.
Never get how you can get, you know, how people sue for millions of dollars anyway.
My brother-in-law is an attorney. When he comes over for Christmas, I'll sit him down and ask him
there
all these
go.
Legal questions.
How do you get to suing someone right. for $1 million?
How do you go from... I get my picture taken all the time. Really? I find that really hard to believe. I really do. I'm sorry. I just don't think that's happening. All right. Again, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Coming up, I do want to stay in the NBA because I want to give props to one team last night that ended a big streak. That's next, SB Nation AM.
This is Mike Herzing from Let's Talk Wheels, an automotive tip brought to you by the great folks at Jeep. Well, folks, it's holiday season, and with it comes shorter days. There are times when we go to work in the dark and we come home in the dark. It's really depressing for some people. Holiday traffic, winter weather, all that's bad enough. But when we're bombarded by all the ads to spend money that might not be there, life isn't always like a Hallmark movie. Holiday stress affects everybody differently. Somebody just rolls with it, and many really struggle. So the next time you're driving to the mall to throw open your wallet and somebody doesn't see the light change because they're maybe texting or daydreaming, please, think twice about blasting the horn or really getting upset. You never know when your actions might be just the thing that pushes them over the edge and they really lose it. Please show a little holiday spirit and cut the other drivers a little slack. There's no better time to play it forward than this season. This is Mike Herzing. Let's Talk Wheels are brought to you by the great folks at Jeep. For more tips, go to letstalkwheels.com and be sure to subscribe to our new Let's Talk Wheels podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play.
This holiday season, Jeep Brand's gift to you is Employee Pricing Plus. That means everyone gets the same price as employees on all qualifying vehicles. So hurry in to the Jeep Big Finish event today. Whether you plan on spending the winter adventuring through the wilderness in a Jeep Cherokee with its 4x4 capability, exploring the city in a luxurious Jeep Grand Cherokee, or seeking the perfect postcard-ready view through Jeep Compass's available panoramic dual-pane sunroof, no matter what your winter holds, you can always make it better in a Jeep SUV. So hurry in to the Jeep Big Finish event to take advantage of Employee Pricing Plus today and end the year with great deals. Offer available on the purchase or lease of a 2020 Jeep Grand Cherokee or any new 2019 Jeep Ram vehicle, excluding Wrangler and Grand Cherokee SRT and Trackhawk. Customer responsible for $200 administration fee. Must take retail delivery by 1-2-20. See dealer for details. Jeep as a registered trademark.
You're listening to SB Nation AM. On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, need a last-minute gift? Hey, Christmas Eve is like 1 week from today. O'Reilly Auto Parts has you covered. They have several options for gifts under $20, like a digital tire gauge, a 20-in-1 multi-tool, storage containers, even a universal backup camera, or you can get professional quality power torque tool sets starting at just $19.99. And they even have gift cards. You can even buy gifts online and pick them up in the store. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. All right, so my props, NBA props last night, and I know it's kind of been, you know, on the side with college football coming and wrapping up, and then you've got NFL obviously heating up towards the postseason. The NBA really picks up Christmas Day with their big schedule, and then it kind of moves into even, you know, more prevalence. But the Milwaukee Bucks last night had an 18-game win streak snapped by the Dallas Mavericks, and they won it on the road. They beat Milwaukee 120-116, but here's the cool part of the trick. The Bucks had everything working for them in that game. They shot over 40% from the floor. Giannis Antetokounmpo had 48 points. They were at home. They were rolling along. And the Mavericks played the game without Luka Doncic, their leading scorer. Not only their leading scorer, but quite possibly the MVP as of right now. I mean, he's at least in that conversation. Kristaps Porzingis had 26. Seth Curry had 26. It was a great game for Dallas, and they beat Milwaukee. So I don't want to ignore moments like this because I think they're pretty cool. I just want to give the props to the Dallas Mavericks because in 1 week, in a week and a day, the NBA gets to showcase itself to the unsuspected public once again with its big Christmas Day schedule. Do you watch a lot of NBA on Christmas Day? Do you throw it on?
Nope.
Or do you watch a Christmas Story? All the way through.
Yeah, Christmas Story. Whatever's floating our boat that day.
Yule Log? Is Yule Log on outside of certain areas? Are they just a log?
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Hey, if you go to Disney Plus, you can watch the Yule Log in Arendelle.
Really?
Yes.
All right. Well, we'll have to throw that on. I guess Christmas Day.
It's only 3 hours long, though. It's not like the Yule Log on your cable network that just streams all day, all night.
Just a burning fireplace with Christmas music.
Well, that's the other thing, too. The Yule Log in Arendelle is just the crackling sound of fire. There's no music.
That's it?
The crackling sound of fire.
Isn't Arendelle in Frozen?
It's Frozen, yeah.
Are the characters going to pop up at any moment and wave to me?
I put it on for about a few minutes just because I was curious of what it was. I didn't see anything. I just saw there was a crackling fire.
Well, it doesn't matter if it's an Arendelle or not. It just matters that there's a log of crackling fire.
That's right.
Right? That's crazy. I love Christmas. I have to tell you, the Christmas NBA games, they start really early. I watch a few. I have it on, but I don't have it on like I'm sitting down watching basketball from 11 a.m. to, you know, midnight. You know, I will have like, there's a game, it's on, I'm going to do this, let's go eat, let's go do this, let's go upstairs, maybe watch this team. Oh, yeah, we got the next game coming on, okay, that's on. Oh, later on, that's going to be a pretty good one, we'll watch that. Like, we got Boston, Toronto, Milwaukee, Philadelphia, those are pretty good games. Houston, Golden State, yuck, because Golden State's terrible. The Clippers and the Lakers, that's a pretty cool game. And then the Pelicans and the Nuggets, which they thought was going to be a good game. They didn't realize the Pelicans were going to lose 12 in a row and absolutely be nowhere near the team I predicted that they were going to be, despite not having Zion Williamson. At the beginning of the season, I said, the Pelicans, despite not having Zion, don't get me wrong, they've got kind of a young, fun team. They're not going to win a lot of games, but they'll be a threat they should be kicking around until they get Zion back. No, they haven't. They're in last place in their division, and they've lost 12 in a row. And they've given up the most points of any team in the NBA. So the games on Christmas Day, three of them are good. Two of them aren't really worth your time. So I just saved you a chance to watch the crackling fire at Arendelle.
Come on now.
From Frozen. I saw Frozen years ago.
As far as the NBA game goes, I mean, that's the kickoff of the season.
Right.
It is Christmas Day. But I still...
For a lot of people, it is.
I can't get into watching. I don't know why. It's just Christmas Day. Maybe it's because I never get the chance of, hey, I'm by myself.
Most people are loaded with family, right? Like, it's very rare that you're having a Christmas alone where you have nothing else to do after the presents are open.
It's like the worst opening day for a sport to have, even though I know it's not their opening day. But, we all look at it as their opening day. Every year they put up these great matchups.
So why do we do this with Thanksgiving, where we have people around Thanksgiving, but we will watch Detroit, we'll watch Dallas, and we'll watch the night game?
That just goes to show you what we prioritize in society.
That's right. We are a football society, so I understand that. But we don't.
But you're absolutely right. We would never in a million years. I don't think it's I don't think it has a difference between, hey, Christmas is a better holiday than Thanksgiving.
All right, so I live in Nashville, right? So let's say the Titans aren't playing, right? And I've got, maybe my parents, and let's say we invite the neighbor for Thanksgiving dinner. So I got a full house. It is almost acceptable after dinner or a brunch or whenever you have Thanksgiving dinner to say, oh, let's watch the Cowboys, and everybody just sits and has the Cowboys game on. But at Christmas, it doesn't feel like you would go, hey, guys, Houston Golden State, who's in? And everybody goes, yay, me. It's like, you live in Houston, unless you live in San Francisco, Oakland, unless you live in the area, it doesn't feel like that's a must settle down and watch.
See, I was going to say this to this point, too, that Thanksgiving, we can get away with, we have the game on in the background. We're just eating and snacking throughout the entire day while dinner is being cooked. Right. And that's something that's a little bit different, but we're doing the same thing on Christmas. So I can't make that argument either, because Christmas, you're kind of just eating and snacking throughout the day, waiting for Christmas dinner to be
cooked.
That's
a good point.
So it's not that, it just is the fact of us being, hey, it's Christmas Day. You're allowed to have football on and you're allowed to watch it. And there's like a certain amount of history and tradition with watching football on that day versus
basketball night
on Christmas Day.
All right, Christmas night, all the presents are open, your kids are playing with their toys, you're relaxing with your wife, it's kind of slowing down.
Yep.
Lakers-Clippers doesn't, you're a Laker fan, Lakers-Clippers at the Staples?
No,
doesn't make you go, oh,
I think I would much rather watch a movie with my wife than have her go to bed and me watching basketball by myself.
That's true.
I think that's what it comes down to.
You're just one husband of the year out there.
Well, I try to.
Would you watch Hallmark over the Lakers?
Oh, hell no.
Okay, so you got at least it's got that.
No, right? it's got to be like Christmas Vacation. You know what?
Right, Elf, Christmas Vacation.
I went through this gamut the other day with my wife and asking her, I was like, I named the three Christmas movies to whether or not they are Christmas movies, and she said no to all three.
Die Hard,
Gremlins, Rocky IV.
Oh, Rocky IV, yes.
She said that's not a Christmas movie. She goes, is that because it takes place during Christmas time? I'm like, yeah, the fight was on Christmas Day. It becomes a Christmas movie.
Yeah, because the Russians were godless people.
Yep.
They didn't believe in Jesus.
They were heathens.
So they had no problem scheduling a fight on Christmas Day. I think that was the point of the movie. when Rocky goes, it's on Christmas. I think the point was to say, oh my gosh, Christmas. Is anything sacred over there? Back in the Cold War. But Gremlins? Gremlins seems like a Christmas movie. I haven't seen Gremlins in a while.
Yep. I mean, there's a couple other ones. I decided, I'm going to Google Christmas movies that are not Christmas. And it had it already lined up for me.
Good for you.
There's a good list here of Christmas movies.
Die Hard is the legitimate debate, though, right? I mean, Die Hard is the real debate.
I think that's the original. That's the original debate.
Nakatomi Building, baby, right? I mean, it's that they had a Christmas party at the Nakatomi Building. What's more Christmassy than that? Hans Gruber and John McClane. What's more Christmassy than those two duking it out at a Christmas party, the Nakatomi Building in L.A.? Merry Christmas, ho, ho, ho. I got a machine gun. How great? You mean, come on, people. It is a Christmas movie.
It's a Christmas movie.
Clifton Brown, one of my favorites, is going to join us next. We're going to talk about the amazing rise of Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens. It's coming up next, SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio. You heard us last hour. We're our top five, bottom five, and it's always the Ravens, right? We got the Ravens, and they're on a 10-game win streak. Rolling right along is the number one seed in the AFC, and I want to get some details on how good this Ravens team is, especially with Lamar Jackson. No better man to do that than Clifton Brown, BaltimoreRavens.com. He joins us on SB Nation Radio. How are you, Clifton?
I'm doing fine, thanks. How are you?
Good. This Lamar Jackson rise, go back to last year. Go back to him taking that job over and knowing that it was his job. From what he is doing now, is this surprising based on what you saw last year?
Yeah, well, I don't think anybody thought that Lamar would be a candidate to me, the front runner for the MVP this year, even heading into this season. You know, last year when he took over, it was because Joe Flacco got injured. They were 4-5 at the time, in danger of missing the playoffs. He came in, won his first couple of starts. When Joe got healthy, John Harbaugh made the decision to stick with Lamar. They finished 6-1 to end last year, and that set the stage for him coming in this year as a starter. But even in spring ball, media, OTAs, I should say, Lamar wasn't throwing the ball as well as he is now. But he really made a leap late in the summer. When he got to training camp, he was throwing the ball extremely well, and it just hasn't stopped him there. I mean, one of the fascinating things about Lamar Jackson is he seems to improve from month to month, sometimes even week to week, and he doesn't repeat mistakes. And what we've seen is a guy at age 22 who now, to me, should be the winner of the MVP.
Take me back to the draft. Take me back to when the Ravens brass in their war room was analyzing trading in to get Lamar Jackson. How was he on their radar? What did they like about him coming out of college that other teams didn't like about him? What did they see? Tell us that whole process. Because his rise from a guy that people said, you know, maybe you should be a wide receiver, to a quarterback MVP in a very short amount of time is really fascinating to me.
Yeah, I think everybody saw what a great athlete Lamar was. I think what the Ravens saw initially was his leadership, how much everybody at Louisville loved him, and not just people on the football team, teachers, students, cheerleaders, people who worked in the cafeteria. Everyone loved Lamar, so they knew he could be a leader, which is crucial for the quarterback position. Then they also recognized that he saw the field really well. Even when he wasn't throwing the ball that accurately, he really sees the field well. He rarely misses a guy who's open, you know, doesn't recognize that the guy is open. So they like that about him. And then to get to the draft, once he was still around late in the first round, Ozzie Newsome and the rest of the Ravens front office knew that he would go early on day two if he didn't go late in the first. And when they had a chance to trade up with Philly to get that last pick of the first round, instead of waiting, even though they didn't need a quarterback right away, they saw the potential in Lamar Jackson. They decided to trade up and take him with that last pick in the first round, which turned out to me to be almost a genius move at this point.
Absolutely. And when you do take a quarterback in the first round, and I'd be honest, I don't know how it wouldn't be taken other than a message for the future, if not the immediate future. How did Joe Flacco take it, and how did the organization sort of process what they were doing? They were taking a quarterback in round one, and he was going to be the future, but what did that mean for Flacco?
Well, obviously, I don't think any vet likes it deep down when your team takes a quarterback with a first-round pick. That means that, you know, they probably feel at some point this guy's going to be the starter and you're not going to be. I think Joe took it as well as you possibly could. Joe's a great guy. Joe took it as a challenge, okay? He says, hey, they feel like maybe this guy should be my replacement. I'm going to play so well it doesn't matter who they pick, that I'm going to keep the job for a while. But, you know, as it turned out, he got hurt midway through last year. The team wasn't doing that well. And Lamar just provided a spark. It was undeniable when he got into the lineup as a starter. The players responded to him. And it wasn't just a flash in the pan thing. Sometimes you'll see, you know, a quarterback change that lasts for a month or two that, you know, gets to be a good thing. And then the kind of backup kind of goes to reality. They knew Lamar's potential. He kept playing better. and it was clear that it was time to make the change.
So we all marvel, and we're talking to Clifton Brown, BaltimoreRavens.com on the Ravens. We all outside of Baltimore sort of don't watch week in and week out, but see enough of the highlights to say, my God, he's making the game look easy. And it's easy when you're making the game look easy. But Clifton, when you watch when the other team has kept it in check a little bit, where they're not exploding for 45 points, when maybe he's not running for 100 yards or whatnot, how has he handled himself then? Because not every game on this 10-game win streak has been double-digit blowouts.
No, it hasn't. And that's one of the things that they love about Lamar is his competitiveness. He's a guy who the main thing on Lamar's mind is winning the football game. It's not his stats. It's not, you know, whether he's throwing the ball well or not. The main thing on his mind is doing whatever it takes to win the football game. And in games like that, grinded out games, which they've had recently, games which they're probably going to have in the playoffs, all he's really, the bottom line is, even if he's not having the type of eye-popping numbers where, you know, he's going to be player of the week or player of the month, or people are going to be talking about him for the rest of the week, he's just worried about winning the game. So his competitiveness, I've never seen a guy who actually believes that every time you get the football, you're supposed to score a touchdown. I mean, he's angry when they kick a field goal. He really is. And he uses that anger as motivation. He doesn't get flustered. It just seems to make him more determined the next time to accomplish what he wants to accomplish.
We kind of remember the championship level Ravens as defensive oriented teams. Defensively this year, where are they? Where would you put them? Not so much comparison to the great Raven defenses, but where are they compared to other defenses in the league this year?
Yeah, well, I think the best thing about the Ravens defense is it's on the rise. They're playing much better defensively now than they were earlier in the season. I think the trade for Marcus Peters obviously was crucial. I think they've got the best secondary in the NFL when you put Peters with Marlon Humphrey and Brandon Carr and Jimmy Smith. I don't know of another team that has four corners like that. So that's really helped them, their entire defense. They can cover people. Even their pass rush to me has come on. Matthew Judon's having a heck of a year, but they don't have the depth of pass rushers they've had in the past. But because they can cover, because Wink Martindale's done a great job dialing up blitzes, they can get pressure on quarterbacks. So they can cover, they can get pressure on quarterbacks. They're pretty good against the run. Their defense definitely, to me, is good enough, particularly with this offense, to win a Super Bowl. And kind of, you know, a team that's won 10 straight, obviously they're a Super Bowl contender.
When they were 2-2 after that loss to the Cleveland Browns, did you still see a championship level team that was just having some early season struggles, or did you see a team that really needed to do something and find a way to get better?
I was concerned, and definitely I think the coaching staff was concerned. After that, that loss to Cleveland, which was their last loss, they had given up 500 yards in back-to-back games. So they cut one of their linebackers, Tim Williams. They moved Kenny Young. Now is with the Rams, who went in the Marcus Peters trade. They moved Kenny Young out of the starting lineup. They signed L.J. Fort. They signed Josh Bynes, a linebacker who had been with them before. And Fort and Bynes really brought a steadiness to the linebacker position. And then, of course, when they traded for Peters, to me, that's when the team really took off. So, yeah, they needed to make some changes. They were trying to still figure things out after losing Terrell Suggs and Za'Darius Smith and C.J. Mosley and Eric Weddle off of last year's defense. They had a lot of things to figure out and hadn't figured them all out in September. Now, in December, they have a much better handle of the type of defense they need to play well.
Clifton, with Lamar Jackson rushing for over 1,100 yards, it's one thing to say this is why they're one of the top rushing teams, if not the top rushing team in the league. But how important is Mark Ingram, and what is his role on the rushing attack for the Ravens?
Extremely important. I mean, Mark Ingram's having an incredible year. A guy, 30-year-old running back, who's showing absolutely no sign of slowing down in any way. He never seems to miss a hole. The first guy rarely brings him down. He runs with the physicality. And then on top of all that, he's instantly become a team leader. The people here in Baltimore didn't know Mark Ingram as well as they do now. They knew he was a talented player, and the Ravens wanted a physical back to go with Lamar, kind of the thunder and lightning thing, but they didn't know what a great leader Ingram was. And so, yeah, he's been perfect, really, for this team. I think he's a vet who's brought a lot of leadership, whether it's to the practice field, in the locker room, game day, a lot of enthusiasm. He plays with the enthusiasm of a rookie, You know, he's consistent every week. And, yeah, he is crucial. And when you have Lamar and Ingram going, I mean, that's why the Ravens have the number one rushing attack in the NFL.
You got to give me a read on my man Hayden Hurst. I went to South Carolina. He was one of my favorite players, still watching this team after 20 years. How's Hayden doing in Baltimore?
Well, he's doing better. You know, he had a tough foot injury as a rookie last year. Even though he played, I don't think we ever saw the total Hayden Hurst last year. This year, he's healthy. You know, with Mark Andrews and Nick Boyle, the Ravens have three really good tight ends. So Hayden isn't featured in this offense as much as he would be if he had gone somewhere else. But he loves it here. Obviously, he loves the winning. That tight end group is really close. And he's getting some more opportunities. He's earning some more opportunities, I should say. And I think, yeah, he's going to make some big plays. He already has, you know, here in the latter part of the season. I think in the playoffs, he's a guy to watch because, as we've seen, when he's got an opportunity, he's not only dangerous catching the ball, he's dangerous after he makes a catch. He has the speed to take it to the house.
With going back to Lamar Jackson, just from an off-the-field perception, does winning the Heisman Trophy, being a national collegiate figure, does it help him in this role where you're more than just an on-field quarterback? You're now a face of a franchise. The public wants a piece of you. Media wants a piece of you. Sponsors want a piece of you. Has that helped him? Have you noticed, is there a transition that he has made from maybe his rookie year to now? Or is he always like this, just has that natural personality?
Well, I mean, I think it definitely helped that, you know, he was a guy in college who was a star to deal with the attention he's getting now. But Lamar is so focused, I don't think it makes any difference. I mean, he was ready to be a star when it was thrust on him the first time at Louisville. He was ready for the attention because he's such a grounded guy. I mean, he really isn't a guy caught up into the limelight, the commercials. He really, football is a passion for him. And he just loves, you know, being with his teammates, hanging out with his friends and family. He's not really looking to be the superstar that he's going to be. I think, it's, you know, it's something he's obviously going to have to handle because at 22, barring injury, I think he's going to be one of the NFL's top faces now for the next decade. But he can handle it. He has the perfect personality because, again, I don't think he's going to get caught up in that. He just wants to win Super Bowls. He puts an S on it. He hasn't won one yet,
right,
but he wants to win Super Bowls, not just one. And when you have that kind of drive, I don't think, you know, the limelight is going to, you know, deter you from reaching your goals.
Clifton, always good talking to you, my friend. Thank you so much for giving us a little insight on the Ravens. I appreciate it, my friend.
Thanks for having me, man. Take care.
You got it. Yeah, Clifton Brown, BaltimoreRavens.com, on the Ravens, who have the best record in the AFC. I think best record in the NFL now, as everybody in the NFC is 11-3. So, and good, interesting insight onto Lamar Jackson, how it all came about. You got to think, if you're a Super Bowl winning quarterback like Joe Flacco, and they trade into round one to get a QB, you can say all you want in front of the media, and you can say everything. Oh, no, it's good. It's, you know, I'm welcome the competition. But when you're home with your wife and kids and family, I bet you're saying a totally different thing. I got to believe you're telling a whole totally different thing than what you're saying to the media when that occurs. When a team drafts a quarterback in round one, they're looking at the future quickly. As quickly. They're not going to keep him on the bench for 5 more years. All right. Again, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, Ron with two N's, as we continue along at SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. Thanks to Clifton Brown, BaltimoreRavens.com. You know, the reason I was asking about Lamar Jackson is that I do think, and again, it does depend on your personality. Right. If you have a personality that can handle the media attention, the scrutiny, when things are great, they're great. When things are not great, they're not great. If you're grounded, it does allow you to kind of handle the ups and downs easier. Obviously, for Lamar Jackson, it's been up and up and up and up. But you look at a guy like Duck Hodges in Pittsburgh, right? He was really thrusted onto the national stage. He played at Samford University in Birmingham, Alabama, was, you know, playing in, you know, the FCS. Nobody knew who he was. We were all Googling him when he finally took over, for the Steelers job. That first start that he had, nobody knew who he was. All right, so it's cool, it's neat, he's a nobody, now he becomes a somebody, but when you become a somebody, especially in a city like Pittsburgh, where you're guiding the Steelers, and there's t-shirts that are being made for you, and everybody's calling your name, and everybody's mentioning you in the broadcasts, and all of the attention that you're getting, and then you have a game like what he had, which is, you know, four interceptions, it was five turnovers, they lose nationally televised game to the Bills, not a must win, but a really kind of important game that you kind of had to have. Now here comes the scrutiny. Mason Rudolph should start against the Jets, blah, blah, blah. Right? All of a sudden you go, wow, I was nobody just a couple of weeks ago. I was nobody at the start of this season. Nobody knew who I was at the beginning of the season, and I was a nobody for the first three or four weeks of the season. Then I became somebody. Then I'm handling all the scrutiny that I've never had to handle before. And now, you know, how do you handle it? Well, if you're grounded, you handle it better. If you kind of know who you are, deal with the ups and downs. You can handle it. When you're Lamar Jackson, I mean, you win a Heisman Trophy as what? I think one is a sophomore. And then you're on the national stage. Every time Louisville is around when you're playing, it's always like, oh, yeah, and they've got Lamar Jackson, right? It's you become this national figure. You can't really equate that to what's going with what you have at the NFL, but it's similar. And it must be a little easier for him to be like, I know what this is. I mean, my God, I stood in front of a whole bunch of people and accepted one of the biggest trophies in all of sports at a very young age. I mean, he's only 22, for crying out loud. Isn't that amazing? I mean, he's 22. I feel like I've known Lamar Jackson since forever.
The crazy thing to think is Joe Burrow's is older than Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Lamar Jackson had a vote for the Heisman Trophy, possibly voted for a guy that was older than him to win the award. And he's a professional football player in his second year.
And he's going to get the MVP.
He's had the Heisman Trophy and the MVP in a very short amount of time. Fantastic.